Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life.
Welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman. I'm sitting here with...
Hey, I'm Tom Regan.
And...
I'm Darren Larson.
We are here with another episode of Lampstands. What is Lampstands, guys? We've explained this ad nauseum, but we want people to understand. What is it?
Yeah, so if you go to Revelation chapter 1, there's a picture of one like a son of man who is walking among the lampstands, and that one like a son of man is none other than Jesus Christ, the risen Lord.
And what are the lampstands?
And the lampstands are the churches. And so the idea and the picture that we have is that the living Christ is living among and walking among his churches, that is his people. We're not talking about buildings, we're talking about people. And so this is what gives us hope to do ministry and life and to be pastors and to be involved in ministry, linking arms with those who are in the church, is that Jesus is here. When we gather, Jesus is here.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We want to be mindful that, yes, we are grateful that the Lord Jesus works in Imprint Church, but keep in mind that he's also working in other churches around here. He's got people everywhere. And we want to celebrate that and let that be encouraging to us.
Yeah, yeah. And why are we doing this right now, Darren? What's the idea here?
Yeah, I've said often because we live in a time that is very polarized, and our heart for the church is to not buy into that cultural narrative of polarization and to buy into a prayer that Jesus prayed in John 17, which is for unity, for us to be one. And so there's a sense like all these churches that Tom just talked about are on the same team, like the gospel-centered, Jesus-centered, Bible-centered churches that want to see people come to Jesus, want to see disciples being made, I mean, want to see the Great Commission and Great Commandment lived out in the context of their own communities.
Yeah.
And so this, no church is a competition, and this is the cool part about being part of a global amazing, you know, movement that we, so we're building unity. That's what we're doing.
Building
That's
unity.
My long way of saying we're building
unity.
Yeah, I like
that. It's a good thing. Yeah. Go read John 17. It's a long prayer, and Jesus says he prays something for, not just for those who were in front of him, but for those who came after, and that's us, and it was unity, which is pretty powerful stuff. So to that end, we have a very special guest with us today. Very special guest. Who are you?
Well, I wouldn't say very special.
Oh,
just maybe regular special.
I would. Not extra special.
Yeah, just regular special.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, regular special. My name's Ryan Plants. I am the lead pastor at Arbor.
Arbor
church.
Is a church far, far away from us.
Yeah, far. It's a train ride, a boat ride, and a plane ride away. Down the road.
Down the road.
Just all seriousness, you could have walked here.
Yeah, I could have walked here. Actually, I probably should have walked here.
Have a side, but they don't have. There's no sidewalk, so
there's no sidewalk. There's like a big semi truck blocking my way, and I thought to myself, I might have to walk.
It's true,
but I found a way to not have to physically exert myself.
That's excellent. Well,
and coming in the Imprint Church parking lot during the week is a little bit of a risky thing if you're walking around,
because
may get hit by a truck at some point.
They're everywhere.
It's interesting. It's a plight we both have to deal with.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, because you get trucks backing up in your area and all that kind of
stuff. For Pepperidge Farm. We share an office with Pepperidge Farm.
I saw that. Pepperidge Farm.
Goldfish.
Like regional, or is that like corporate?
Regional. Okay. Yeah, I think their corporate office is bigger.
Do they have some, like those Milano cookies in the office?
I've wondered.
Those are so good.
We need to head over to Arbor right now.
I made the joke the other day that Tom is like pastor of snacks at Imprint Church because he's always snacking. So maybe we should go share some space over
there.
This
is the unity that Jesus was talking about.
That's right.
Snack King Cole. I call myself Snack King Cole.
I like it. Yeah.
You know, if you do something together, like a mission or something, it binds you together forever. So if we go break into Pepperidge Farms together, we are now one.
See, when you said mission,
forever.
I thought you meant like
no,
mission.
I mean, okay. I mean dun, 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 yes. dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Mission
dun,
impossible dun, dun, style. Yeah. Mission.
Who's hanging from some goldfish?
Who's hanging from the ceiling? I have a feeling I end up being the tech guy in this. Anyway.
Yeah, you can be the guy in the computer.
Yeah, you'll be in the van outside.
Exactly. Like the Pepperidge Farm guy is like asking me to move, and like, we got way off
topic. This is an amazing movie.
So Ryan, you have started at Arbor not too long ago, is that right? You've been the pastor there for what, 2 months?
A little over 2 months. That's it. Yeah, I started July 17th. Was technically my first day.
Yeah. Yeah, welcome to the area.
Yeah,
yeah, welcome, man. Yeah. So cool to have you here. I saw it announced on a Instagram or something, I think, that showed that you were coming in. And actually, Tom and I were like, dude, awesome.
Let's meet this guy.
Let's meet this guy. And so I sent you an email a while back and said, just welcome and love to connect. So Tom and I both had been able to have lunch with you on different occasions. So thanks for making time to hang out with us.
Seriously.
Absolutely. Yeah. My pleasure.
Well, man, let's back up a little bit. You know, two, 3 months ago, you ended up here. Are you from the area? Were you born here? Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, not from the area. Oddly enough, my wife is. So, yeah, before I dive into my past, my wife is from Woodinville. And she's actually a Woodinville High School graduate.
That's amazing. Uh-huh.
Class of 2000.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, this is home for her.
Yeah.
But I'm from Chicago.
Is her family still here then, Stephanie?
So her family is around the Puget Sound, Port Orchard area.
That's right. That's right. Uh-huh. I know a little bit about Port Orchard.
Yeah.
I spent my first 18 years of life there.
That's hometown for you, right?
Hometown, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm from Chicago. Originally, born and raised there, grew up in a suburb just outside the city called Des Plaines, and then I went to school in the city as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Did you grow up in church? Was faith a part of your life growing
up?
Yeah,
do you want me just to tell that story?
Yeah, man. We want to hear your
story. Okay, so that story up until when? Like, when should I prepare to...
Whatever you want to share, man. We want to hear what the Lord has done in your life.
Yeah, part of it
is like that. Launching pad to how you got into ministry and what the Lord's done in your life. So, like, a lot of that starts way back when, you know? Like, how did you even, you know, encounter Jesus?
Yeah. So my parents, my dad was raised Roman Catholic in Chicago, and my mom was raised sort of nominally Baptist in the desert in New Mexico.
Oh.
So they met at college in New Mexico State and got married and moved back up to Chicago, where my dad had a job. And they were not really following the Lord, I think, in their first few years of marriage. I don't want to speak for them. I don't know their story entirely. I just know things weren't great, and they were trying to figure things out, and they had me, and they had two of my sisters. And so they got plugged into, they moved out from the city into the suburbs, and we got this house when we were really young, and got plugged into this church. And that's where my dad really began to follow after Jesus in a non-Catholic sense. And my mom was there with him, and he got baptized. I was probably 3 or 4 would be my guess at that time. And started, we were going to that church, and it was at that church at like a Sunday night service that I remember. Because this was back when you would go to like church on Sunday morning,
Sunday night, Wednesday night,
and then Wednesday night.
You did that, Rex. Yeah.
This was like, it wasn't Baptist, it was a Bible church. It was called Mount Prospect Bible Church. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing the gospel one Sunday night and going home. And my brother, I had a younger brother, and he was asleep on the bottom bunk. And I remember getting in the top bunk, and my mom was putting me to bed, and I started asking her about what I'd heard that night. And it was then and there that, you know, I prayed, you know, the prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
To follow after Jesus. 7 years old.
7. Cool.
And so that kind of began my journey with the Lord. And again, it's, you know, you're so young and you're not quite sure what's happening, but you just have this sense that like...
You accept kind of like what you can understand.
What you can understand. Like, here's this person, Jesus, and he offers me forgiveness. And at the time, it's like, you know, like he's going to forgive me for, you know, hitting my sisters stealing cookies out of the oh, this is fantastic.
This is going back to the Pepper Charm thing.
Yes, it totally is. Like that extra Milano. I do have a cookie story, but I won't tell it right now as a kid. Actually, I'm going
to
tell it real quick.
Yes, so please
my mom had these cookies, and they were these really nice, like mint chocolate cookies that she would keep in the refrigerator. And we were not allowed to have them. We were not allowed to touch them, but she bought us the cheaper Keebler Elf, like mint grasshoppers.
Oh yeah,
right?
yeah.
And so those were in the cabinet, but her cookies were in the refrigerator.
Wait, were the cookies for her to eat?
So the cookies in the refrigerator were for her, and they were circular chocolate mint cookies, but with like an icing on the inside.
Ooh.
They were nice, like they were delicious, but they were just mom's stash. But we had these grasshoppers. However, I concocted in my little like 6-7 year old mind. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take some of her cookies and I'm going to replace them with the
grasshoppers. Because they look exactly the same.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And she will be none the wiser. And then lo and behold, she starts tapping to her cookies and she starts eating and she's like, this is the lower grade stuff. Like, obviously.
These are the JV cookies I got for my kids.
Yes, exactly. And she was like, Ryan. And I was like, I knew. I was toast. Yeah. So anyway, I knew
Jesus. The Lord forgave you for that.
I knew that Jesus would forgive me for that.
Yeah.
And so... So we were going to this church, Mount Prospect Bible Church, and like I said, a couple younger sisters, and I had a younger brother. And in 92, the year after that, my younger brother Kyle was diagnosed with a rare form of pediatric cancer called neuroblastoma. And so my family, we were like deeply involved in the church. My dad kind of went from like nominally following Jesus as a Catholic to now kind of fully submerging himself. He was like the director of the Awana program. And man, they were like all in on church, all in on Jesus. And Kyle got diagnosed with neuroblastoma, and that was a huge test for our family.
Yeah.
A huge trial for our family. My brother went through chemotherapy, radiation, bone marrow transplant, all at Children's Memorial Hospital in downtown Chicago.
Wow.
And about 4 or 5 months in, he went into remission. So I remember kind of his, we had like a 100-day remission party at our house and all these things that summer of 93. But then October of 93, the cancer came back. And they said that at this point it's inoperable and it's essentially terminal, that there are some options for them to perhaps try some experimental procedures, but that at this point, like, it was terminal. And so my parents were really faced with the hard decision of what do we do next. And so from the moment my brother was diagnosed to the moment he passed away, November 17th, was about 5 or 6 weeks.
Wow.
And I would say, as hard as it was kind of going through that first round, obviously this was like so much more significantly difficult. And I remember this was probably my first like deep kind of spiritual encounter with God, was at my brother's wake. So that's what we call viewings in the Midwest, is the wake. And I remember going up to his casket, and I remember kneeling there, and I was just weeping. And internally, I'm not sure I said this out loud, but internally I was just like, why God? Like, why would you do this? Why would you allow this to happen to my brother? Why would you allow this to happen to my family? And so I think what was really incredible to see, though, was how God did use that time of suffering in my family's life to strengthen and galvanize my parents' faith and their marriage. I mean, so many marriages, when they go through the loss of a child, they end.
Yeah.
End in divorce. And by God's grace, my parents are still together to this day. They have a strong marriage. They love the Lord. And it really galvanized our family as well.
How old were you, Ryan? And how old was your brother?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I was nine when my brother passed away.
Okay.
Or eight, going on nine. And my brother was three. He was three.
Jeez. So sorry.
Yeah, but my parents did a really incredible job, like, helping us like process that.
Yeah.
We would celebrate his birthday every year, you know, until I graduated high school. And we did that every single year. We had a memorial at his gravesite every year. We'd go there and we'd share memories. We'd go out to dinner, and a lot of it would be laughter and tears and this whole mix. And so that was a big moment in my life, just kind of coming to terms with how God operates in the world.
Yeah.
And why do these evil, bad things happen, you know, to people that you love? And and so a few years after that, I was baptized. And then a few years after that, I was in this small group in like eighth grade at this church. And I had a small group leader give me a book called Knowing Scripture by R.C. Sproul.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember reading that because I was really starting to get into the Bible in middle school. And he's like, I think you'd really like this. And I read it. And man, it just like fired me up to learn about and love the Bible even more. I just thought, like, if this is what this is, if this book is really what this guy says it is, and it really is what God says it is, then I want to read it. I want to know it. I want to study it. I want to teach it. And so went through that season. That church was kind of dying during that time. So we started going to a new church, kind of this bigger, growing, thriving church in the Chicagoland area. And that's when I encountered my first cool youth pastor. And so I saw this dude and I was like, this dude gets to like hang out with like middle school and high school students, and he gets to play games, and he gets to teach the Bible. Like, that's the job
I
want.
Sold.
I was I was like, sign me up.
Where do I get that?
How do I do that? Like, can you get paid to do this?
Yeah.
I was like, tell me more.
Yeah.
And so
yes, you get paid a lot.
Yeah.
We pay in pizza.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. No one ever told me how not lucrative it was, but I said to myself, you know, it's all good. And he went to Moody Bible Institute, which was kind of like, if you're going to go into ministry in the Chicagoland area, that's where you would try to go to. And so I went through high school. I applied to Moody and got into Moody and loved it. Great 4 years of my life. Fell in love with the Lord even more. Studying God's word. And that's where I met my wife, Carrie.
What did you major in while you're at Moody?
I majored in biblical studies with a minor in biblical languages.
Cool. Very
yeah.
cool.
Yeah. 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 Some great classes. Moody's got some very specific views on things. Mm-hmm. And so they taught like very... like, for instance, I'm not sure if anyone's ever talked about dispensationalism
sure.
on oh, this
yeah.
podcast
yeah,
before.
We have.
Yeah. yeah. Okay, yeah. cool.
We did two or three of them on that. Yeah.
Did you really on yeah. that just, topic
just,
alone?
We did, but we did the millennium and counterpoints on that.
Okay,
and all
cool,
that.
Cool.
Like, what does the Christian, traditions say about these things?
Sure.
Yeah. So we yeah. did totally. One like pre-mill, and we did a pre-mill with dispensational, and we did post-mill, we did on-mill, all that stuff. So
awesome.
We're nerdy.
But, yeah. No, that's, yeah. no, that's really getting in the weeds. Uh-huh. You know, it's great. I love it. But they taught that, and that was like the first time I ever heard about it. And I was like, I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
this,
totally.
All the charts and everything. I yeah. was like, so there were certain things where like I just really couldn't like buy into.
Yeah. Yeah.
As I was kind of going through my studies there, but there was a lot more that I just loved. I thought it was fantastic. But I think you know one of the highlights was I met my wife.
That's
yeah,
cool.
Carrie. Totally.
Yeah. Met her at a Starbucks I worked at. So while I was at Moody, I worked at Starbucks, and a friend of mine at Moody brought her in because she was looking for a job.
Darren, didn't you also work at Starbucks when you were in the Chicago area? Wheaton near Chicago?
Yeah, it is. It's a suburb.
It's
yeah.
a suburb.
Did you work at?
I didn't. I tried to because they had health insurance and
yeah.
I was married.
Yeah.
Because I was
yeah.
a graduate school student.
Oh, that's
Wheaton.
Right. You worked at a Catholic bookstore.
Yeah. I was trying to work at Starbucks, but then when I started my program, they're like, "Yeah, if you're doing this program, you shouldn't work." So yeah. I was like, "I'm glad I didn't work in the long run."
Anyway, sorry. Go back to
yeah. No. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
You met your wife, so that's good. How long did you guys date through college?
Yeah, we dated. We dated for a year. Engaged for about 6 months or 5 months or something, and then got married August of 2006. We were both still students at Moody. I didn't graduate till 2007, and then she graduated in 2008.
Nice.
So she still had like a year and a half of school, two years of school, and we lived in a little basement level apartment in Chicago. Toward the end of her senior year at Moody, she got pregnant with our first child.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his name's Ethan. We were planning on moving to Florida though that summer, and so we moved to Florida. I helped plant the church down there, and that didn't.
Were you involved in ministry in the Chicagoland area?
I was.
While you're a student at Moody.
I was. Yep. Yeah, I was a worship leader at a church there.
Cool.
And involved in a youth group.
Yeah, yeah.
There as well, and it was through that church that we ended up going to plant the church in Central Florida.
Yeah.
And we did that for about a year and a half, and that didn't go super well.
Oh man, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
That was a really hard season for us. It was hard.
What was hard? Oh, sorry. You were about to say
what
was hard about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It was hard for multiple reasons. You know,
the first reason, we were living in Central Florida.
Yeah. Honestly.
Super hot and humid.
Honestly,
alligators.
Not a lie. Not
yeah,
a lie.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, Central Florida, man. Like when you grow up in Chicago, it's just, it's not great. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. it's hot. It's humid.
There's alligators.
There's alligators. Yeah. The culture is just weird. It's just weird culture, man. Like, I don't know how to describe it. It was not for me from the jump.
All I have to yeah. say, I was born in Florida, and so do I have a right to say this? If anyone just, you go into Google, and you type in your birthday and yeah. type the word Florida
yeah.
man.
It's oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
beware, you might find some news articles.
Inappropriate.
That are,
yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But it's just amazing. Like, you can find out what happened on your birthday in Florida by some crazy Florida man. There's yep. always crazy.
Totally.
Guys.
It's yeah. so funny.
So you didn't like Florida.
Yeah. It's a fun party trick.
Didn't like it. A lot of Florida men. Encountered down there. It was, you know, there was definitely just, it was a learning experience for me to know that, like, not everyone kind of comes into ministry wanting to run the same kind of ministry playbook
yeah.
or with the same ministry philosophy. And I just really chafed under the leadership there.
Oh, yeah.
Our visions didn't align. Mm-hmm. And
what was your role, like an associate, co-lead? What was
I was like the worship and small groups director.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm. And
did they send a team? That church in Chicago kind of send a team to do that, or was
yeah,
it like...
we had 3 full-time guys
wow.
from the very beginning.
Crazy.
It was a well-funded church
yeah.
for a variety of reasons.
Yeah,
And I was the worship and small groups guy and had a vision for how we would build ministry kind of more naturally and more
yeah.
organically.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the vision, you know, for the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
I was told at one point that, hey, we are competing against Disney World.
Oh,
yeah.
You know?
So you got to do the latest and greatest and the biggest and best. And,
You don't go up against Disney World. Oh, my gosh.
No, you'd rather be in alliance with them rather than a competitor of some sort, you know?
It's funny. I was involved in a ministry, a church plant in Chicago, in the Chicagoland area, kind of out in West Chicago. And I remember the pastor once told me, he's like, every single church out here lives in the shadow of Willow Creek. And it was like it was a sad statement to me, but I liked him. The pastor was a great guy, but I think he felt that pressure to do the big thing and to like, and it was a church plant and we were terrible. I played drums at this church plant. I'm not a drummer, but I played drums at this church plant 'cause no one else could. Right.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of a cool experience to see, some people like fight against that too, you know? And so it was like, it was a grief thing, but also a realization. It sounds like that's what you faced in Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if it was like that naivete or that idealism that you walk into ministry with or whatever, but at the time I really held to my guns to the point where I got fired from that job. Just because, for sure there were things on my part that, being young, early 20s, prideful, like I think I have all the answers. I really was.
We call it young man syndrome.
Yes. Like I was relentless. Mm-hmm. You know, I would walk out of meetings.
That's dramatic. Have you done StrengthsFinder before? The StrengthsFinder book?
Someone asked me this afternoon.
I wonder if belief is one of your.
It could be. I was going to look it up. We were going to look it up on email just to see a couple of them. And, I didn't. I should have. It would have been perfect. It would have been providential. Yeah. I could have spouted him off.
Tell
right
me
now.
Later. I'm curious.
I will. Yeah, I totally will. And I wouldn't like storm off and yell, but I'd just be like,
I'm taking my ball and going home.
Exactly. Yeah. But I'd just be like, no, I'm done. Yeah. Like that's and just walk anyway. So that didn't go well. Mm-hmm. It didn't go well on multiple fronts. So we had our first kid there, Ethan. Mm-hmm. He's 13 now. But we bought a house down there.
Wow.
The church actually helped us buy a house.
Huh, man.
And it was a townhome, and we bought it in October of 2008, if you know anything about, financial cycles, there was a major crash already happening when we were buying the house. Like, it wasn't even, like, before it. It was, like, in the middle of it. Yeah.
Like, we'll go ahead and buy this.
Yeah. And I was, like, I just was not tuned into, like I said, like, when I was, like, I want to go to ministry, never knew it was, like, a non-lucrative thing. Yeah. And then, like, I never paid attention to markets or anything like that. And so bought this house and was just like, man, this is going to be great. And then when we tried to sell the house a year and a half
later,
it was awful. Yeah. We were underneath on our house by like $80,000.
Yikes.
And finally found a buyer for that price and we had a short sell.
Yeah.
And so that we went through all of that. So here I am in like my mid-20s and we have a kid and I'm not working at this church anymore. And we short sold our house and my credit is bombed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so we moved to North Carolina. So one of those cool youth pastors that I had first met at that new church we were going to in Chicago, he planted a church in a town called Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where Wake Forest is. And they were looking for a college and worship pastor. Mm. And so I said, sign me up. Let's go. So we moved north to North Carolina. And that was a really great 5 years for our family. Mm. We, obviously rented our home the whole time during that season. Cause
you weren't
mine. Yes, exactly. That was not going to be on the agenda. And we had two more kids there, Miles and Eleanor, and they're all about 2 years apart. So they're 13, 11, and 9. And it was a really sweet season of ministry. So during that time, I was a worship and college pastor, and then I ended up just being a high school and middle school youth pastor because I wanted to teach more and was really grateful for that season because I really felt like I was able to exercise that gifting and teach more and more. Eventually that lead pastor left that church. Mm. And so I put my hat in the ring to, I'd love this role. Mm-hmm. He actually said as he was leaving, he's like, I think you should give it a shot.
Nice.
And then when I did it, one of the elders within like 2 weeks was like, no chance.
Not yet. Oh, gosh.
It's not like, I believe that's in your future, but not your immediate future.
Oh, man.
And, that was wise of him to think that.
Yeah, we laugh, but it's probably a little sad too. I imagine there's probably a little bit of grief there. You said it was a great experience, right? That church was. Yeah, totally.
It really was. Man. It was. You know, there were ups and downs for sure.
Yep.
But then coming out of that season, at that point we were like, we don't know where the future is. And the guy that they were looking to hire, it just didn't seem like it would be a good fit. And we already kind of knew what that felt like in Florida. And around that same time I had, my friend who I planted the church in Central Florida, he had planted a church up in West Michigan. So he had left that church as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And planted a church up with his father in West Michigan. And that church was growing. They had about 1,500 people at the church at the time. Wow. Yeah. And they were really experiencing like this season of like fruitfulness and joy. And like, man, like ministry can be exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were going to plant a church about 25 minutes north of their church. And he's like, do you want to come up and help plant that church? They already had a lead pastor. I would come on as associate pastor. Hmm. And so we said, sure. So we packed up our stuff and we moved up to Michigan. At this point, we were able to buy a home. And that started off really well. It was super exciting to kind of be involved in a new thing and to really have a lot of influence and say and like to really work with this guy. And mm-hmm. I really admired and learned so much from this pastor. And that season was really good until it wasn't.
Oh, man.
So Florida, North Carolina, the transitions, the weight caught up to me, and I just went through like a deep season of burnout.
Oh, man.
During that season. And
how did that manifest for you? Was it just like normal? Like, was it kind of a deep depression you couldn't work yourself out of? Or what did it look like?
I was wrestling deeply with mostly anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anxiety and depression, and the ways that I was coping with that was just tremendously unhealthy.
Mm.
So it led to me stepping away from ministry for a year, stepping away in such a way where I thought I might not go back in just because I was so burnt out and so just unhealthy.
Yeah.
Went through a season of just counseling and care, and eventually the individuals who had planted the church that I was part of asked if I would come on staff down in West Michigan. And my wife and I prayed about that for a long time. I mean, it was months. I had actually gone into sales at this point.
Yeah.
And was really enjoying it, enjoying just the, you go to work at 8,
and then you
work hard all day,
work.
And then you leave, and then that's that.
And you made more than a youth pastor does. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah, right. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. It was a good season, and we really wrestled with jumping back into ministry. And I remember I had an interview with the elder board of this new church, and they were talking to me, and I just kind of shared everything about where my heart was and where I'd been over the past year, and almost as like a, you really don't want to hire me.
Mm-hmm.
And they still chose to move forward.
Wow, that's cool.
And stepped into that role, and that eventually kind of morphed into me becoming one of their teaching pastors for a season. That was, again, that's another situation that was like, it was good until it wasn't.
Yeah.
So we were there for 4 years. I was a teaching pastor. I oversaw a portion of the staff. Our church, we had planted another campus. The church, we had life preaching at both campuses, though. The church had grown to like a little over 3,000 people.
Wow.
And I was helping pastor this church with a guy I was a roommate at Moody with and had planted a church in Central Florida, and we were really tight, really close friends. My wife eventually came on staff. She was a counseling major at Moody, and you're familiar with ACBC counseling? She's certified through them, and so she ended up becoming the director of counseling at the church. And so we were just in these really sweet spots in our life and in our marriage and with our kids. And man, like even when COVID hit, like it was like, life's good. Like, the Lord's provided for us. He's taken care of us. And we were really able to shepherd and pastor people even during that season. Like actually my wife and I were able to kind of partner more than ever during that season,
really cool.
Just through Zoom calls and counseling and doing that together. And it was a great season, but there was just some unhealth in the leadership of that church. And we began to speak into it. And to make a long story short about that, as we began to speak into it, it was clear that was not welcomed.
Yeah.
Oh man.
In that space. And so within a few months of really beginning to dive into that, this was mid 2021, my wife resigned. And then a few weeks later, I was asked to step away as well from my role. And that was June and July of 2021. And as hard as my burnout season was in 2016, that season was, I would say, at least 2 times harder.
Oh man.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Just feeling that sense of isolation and exile from a community, to be betrayed, to also try to honor that place where you had seen God do so many incredible things, but we're seeing just some really unhealthy attitudes permeate the leadership and some unhealthy systems and structures. And you didn't want to speak poorly about it specifically, and I even hesitate to like dive deeply into story right now.
You know? Yeah, that's fine. But you don't want to torch it on the way out, but at the same time, it's hard to
But it's hard to explain. Why aren't you guys at our church anymore?
Totally,
you know,
totally. Especially because you guys are still in the community at that point. You're still in the area.
Yeah, so we
bought a house.
Ran into someone in a grocery store.
We lived about 20 minutes north of that church, and there were kind of like these borderlands that we would kind of go to, like the Target. You know, the Target was kind of in between us and the church, and that's where we would see. We knew that if we went down there, we'd see someone because it wasn't a small town, but it was small enough.
When you said the church grew to 3,000 people, and the problem with being on a stage in front of 3,000 people is they know you.
Everyone knows you.
Yes. So, yep. And the church had a very specific logo, and we did this thing where, like, we had these, like, white stickers that you'd put on the back of the car.
Totally.
And anywhere you drove,
you'd see a logo.
You'd see one of these logos. Got it. So it permeated the area.
Yeah.
And so we both left, and we thought, Lord, what do you have for us? I started to look for a new role. I put my application into a bunch of employment search things, Vanderblumen, Slingshot, we know these places,
stuff,
right? All that stuff. And we just got this sense in late July, like, God's not calling us away yet. We got to stay. So I kind of turned all that off. I was actually like in active interviewing with like two or three churches, two in Chicago, one in California. And I said, I'm sorry, we're not ready to move yet.
Yeah.
It's not right for us to, and you probably don't want me in the current state that I'm at, you know?
Yeah.
And so I started to look into sales again, but then eventually there was this small Baptist church in downtown Muskegon, which is the city kind of just south of us. We were in this city called North Muskegon, downtown Muskegon. And it's this like post-industrial, like Rust Belt kind of city.
Yeah, yeah.
And this little church was in an area that used to be this vibrant, like manufacturing working class neighborhood back in the mid 20th century, but it was, you know, lower middle income, kind of lower middle income. And they were this dying Baptist church of about 40 people, and most of the people that attended there were over the age of 60, with like a good portion like on heaven's doorstep. And so they were like, we're looking for a pastor. And I started to talk to them, and the Lord was just like, why not? Like, why not give it a shot?
Yeah.
You know? And so we started to talk, and like, it was a pretty massive pay cut from what I was making beforehand, and it didn't include insurance, and it didn't include a retirement plan. I mean, it was just a paycheck. But with that, and my wife got a role as an executive director for a small nonprofit that helped with kids who were raised in foster care, but they were like 18 to 24, and they were transitioning them to adulthood. So they had a boys' home and a girls' home.
Wow.
And so she had that role. I ended up getting this role at this small Baptist church. And we just said, you know what, like, we're going to pour into this little local community, and we're going to, you know, love people well, and I'm going to preach the gospel, and we're just going to be faithful in these small ways during this time. And so we did that, and we thought, well, this is God's plan for us, you know, and our kids got to stay at the school that they were at. They were at this great school up there. That was a big reason why we just didn't want to leave. Our kids were thriving.
Yeah.
Our lives had fallen apart in this area.
Yeah.
But man, our kids were thriving at their school. They were doing so well, and we just didn't want to uproot them. So we took these roles, and that was that was October 2021. Mm-hmm. And within about 3 months, we were just like, okay, this is not feeling right. there was just this sense that like we were pouring ourselves out, and we are still so like exhausted. And I think part of that was from the wounding that we had received that summer of 2021.
Say, I should have taken that job, or obviously it all works out in God's providence and here you are, but just from more of a human perspective, if you were to look back, would you go, I shouldn't have taken that because I was way too tired? And or what do you think?
That's such a tough question, because part of me says yes, I shouldn't have taken it, and I should have just, there was like a dental supply company that was looking for a salesperson, and that I probably should have just like punched that clock for a while. But to see what God has done in that church since then makes me think, but God used it in a really cool way. Perhaps
that's in some ways why I don't know how fruitful it is for me to even think in my life, should I have done that or not? God always works, and he doesn't waste anything, and so
and in many ways there was it was a space for me to continue to engage in like vocational ministry, but it was a slower pace. The expectations were so low. And they just simply wanted my presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And just as much as they wanted my presence, what I ended up learning during that season was that their presence was just as healing for me.
That's cool.
In fact, I think that church, and I'll give them a shout out, Evanston Avenue Baptist Church, they provided a safe place for my wife and myself and my kids to be loved by the church. And that was so restorative for us to be serving a people. I think we could have gone to a bunch of churches during that season and been loved by a church, but to have been called to serve them, but also be so served and loved by them, was like, it restored our faith.
Yeah.
We're going to press forward, and I'm going to continue to run this race and pursue this calling as a pastor, even though every fiber of my being is like,
go get a sales job.
Stop. Yeah. Do anything else. Yeah. Go work at Starbucks again. You know what I mean? Like, figure it out. But we just knew that Christmas rolled around, and it was Christmas, and we were just like, it does not feel like Christmas. There wasn't the sense of like warmth and joy and peace. We were empty. There was an emptiness. And so then we began to look and try to figure out what would be next.
Yeah.
And you just wonder, like, the wisdom, like, if you're feeling that empty, like looking for another role, like, was that the answer? But as we began to do that, we started to tap into that. We used that slingshot.
Slingshot. Uh-huh. Yep.
And we found Arbor.
Yeah.
And Arbor, we had seen it in August. And I told Carrie, like I said at the very beginning, she's from Woodinville. I was like, Carrie, there's a church in Woodinville that's looking. And I knew that it wasn't time to move when there was an opportunity in Woodinville where my wife has been begging. She's been begging to move back to the Pacific Northwest for like the last 10 years.
And she said, no way.
And she said, no, not right now. But then that opportunity popped up in my inbox in January. It was like a rough weekend. It was super cold in Michigan. The boiler had broken at this Baptist church.
It was just the right time. You're preaching in a parka.
Dude, no, we just canceled church. And I was like, we are laboring in vain. Yeah. Like, there's no purpose to this. And, I saw this pop up in the inbox, and it was like, oh, awesome. So I reached out. Actually, I reached out to the guy at Slingshot that I had built a relationship with. And I was like, what do you know about this church? Are they really still looking? Is this a good opportunity? And he's like, yeah, I love them. They're fantastic. Let me connect you.
That's great.
And as we began to do that, I think something about that freed me up to really just enjoy the remainder of whatever season we had at that church. Uh-huh. We really thought that we would be there for like 9 years, that we'd figure it out. The church was like 91 years old. So we thought like we could get to like this 100-year anniversary.
Year.
Yeah. And God was really causing
peace out after that.
Yeah. And just be like, we're done, you know, like you got to 100, you know,
Hundo,
we're out. Yeah. Honestly, that was part of it. It was kind of like we get our kids through school.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But then we thought like once they're in school, like they're more deeply rooted here. Mm-hmm. We're more deeply rooted here. And given the pain that we felt from our previous
church,
we were like, we don't want to be more deeply. We want to leave. We want to get away. Mm-hmm. And so I started the interview process with Arbor, and they were very forthright about their history and their story, and hearing the hurting that they've gone through and the hurting I went through, it felt like the Lord is bringing us
this
together.
This is a match.
This is a match. It's either a perfect match where like God will like bring great restoration and the lessons that I've learned and the lessons they've learned, like we'll be able to encourage one another and grow together, or it could be like a total disaster.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, well, can I ask you a question? Can I back up before we go into the Arbor thing for a second? Because like you've experienced in your life a lot of church hurt in the leadership role of it, which is interesting. And I know there's people out there who've experienced church hurt as well in the kind of
congregational side,
you know.
Yeah.
But what has church hurt and church experiences and maybe disappointments and stuff done for you to kind of help you or grow you, or what is it? What have you learned through that?
As a leader,
and like, or even like, was it easy to give your heart back to a church again and say like, I'm going to jump back in? And what did that look like for you and your wife?
No, it's not.
That's a deep question. It's an emotional question. So you can go as shallow as you want to, but
you've struck a chord inside me. Yeah. It's so deeply painful.
Yeah.
And as a leader, I hope that what God has done inside of me has cultivated an empathy for anyone who walks into a church with baggage and just has a deep understanding of where they've been. Because I fully get it. Mm-hmm. Giving our hearts back. I think here's how I'll put it. I have not given my heart back to a church yet. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, I don't want to jump the gun. I love Arbor. Mm-hmm. But I've realized that I can truly only give my heart to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And without sounding like trite or like, I don't know, like Sunday schoolish,
yeah,
like
spiritual.
Yeah. Or over spiritual. Yeah. Like I would just say there's been this sense of, man, it's so hard to put into words this experience, but that it was almost like, Jesus, you love this thing. Mm-hmm. And I believe by faith that you are real and that you love me. And so I will continue to participate in it because I love you. And it was almost like a renewal of a commitment to Jesus. Mm. To continue to participate in the church was like, if I truly believe in you and I truly trust you and I believe in your promise, I'm going to continue to participate. And I'm going to continue to participate in the way that you've called me to participate, which is to serve the church in a pastoral function.
Yeah.
Because you created, this is your bride.
Yep.
And as hurtful as she's been to like me and my family, I'm going to trust that what you have chosen to accomplish through her here on earth will come to pass. And I want to be a part of that because I do believe there is beauty in that.
Man, that's powerful. Yeah,
that's cool.
I like the idea of giving your heart to Jesus, and that's why you give your heart to the church.
Yeah.
Like that's your step of faith. It's not giving it to the church and saying, this is what I'm supposed to do, but saying like, I'm giving my life to you, Lord, and you've called me to be a part of the thing that you love. And that's beautiful. That's a paradigm shift than saying like, oh, I got to give my heart to this leader or this church or this experience or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You're doing something different there, which is cool.
Yeah. And I would hope that someone who's been hurt by the church and experienced neglect or abuse in a church environment would be able to understand that the church can still be a very beautiful place for them. It's an essential place for our growth, and that even though the church has caused you wounds, that there is that Jesus, I don't know if I can say this, but Jesus believes in his church.
Yeah, sure,
totally.
Like
that's
he believes in it, and if he believes in it, then we should.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my hope and prayer kind of moving forward is like, I just want to see a healthy, functioning church. And that doesn't mean it's going to be perfect. It doesn't mean that it's not going to cause some pain somewhere along the line. But I have to believe that like, if Jesus loves it, that like it's worth loving.
Yeah. Man, that's really powerful.
Well, talk to us a little bit about what your hopes are for Arbor and stuff. Like you're jumping into a new season of ministry here.
I know obviously this interview process with Arbor, you had an idea of like, right, this is what the Lord's doing at Arbor. What was it about that made you think, I kind of want to jump in and move that and move that
it's
needle?
It's not just
and
that you like
along.
The rain and the gray and the cold.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's some other things leading you
and
over
Arbor,
here.
Arbor, let's be honest, Arbor is a really cool church name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great church name.
But wait a second. The weather in Seattle is so much better than the weather in Chicago or Muskegon or anywhere. But yeah.
Probably.
Like,
Darren is right there. When they said, you know, it does get really gray here, I was like, have you been to West Michigan? Like,
There is only gray.
It really is. It's gray from November through April, which I know is same here. Yeah. But it's also like
-400 degrees.
It's so cold, and there's like so many feet of snow. Like it just does not stop snowing.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I can.
You're right. They're worse. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's making me feel better going into the fall.
It's so much worse. It's already so cold there, you know. And to know that we've got like 70s this weekend. But about Arbor, it was a handful of things. Their leadership, their elder board, getting to know them and getting to meet them. They're just a stellar group of people. Hmm. And I was like, wow, like I can lead alongside these people and learn so much from them. the search committee, even. I met the search committee before the elder board. Just such cool, dynamic people that like loved this church. And they were telling me the history of the church and that they were still all at the church. And I was like, man, it must be a really special group of people. And so when we came out and visited the first week of April, we sensed that specialness of community, even though, like, when we got to the building, I was like, this is where this church is meeting.
Yeah.
I was like, what is up with this space?
Can I get a cookie?
Yeah.
And you're like, and that church down the road meets at a truck driving church. Yeah. What's going on in this part of the world?
That's what we do in Ville.
These are such strange places. Honestly, the first time I drove past Imprint, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess we're both kind of in the same boat.
That's totally true.
I was like,
and we're 10 years here this month.
This location. Yeah, like, awesome. Yeah. That's so cool. Yep.
But we don't have goldfish in.
I know.
Milanos.
I don't smell them cooking it down there. You know, it's not like the scent is wafting up. Yeah, I think they just package it there.
You just ruined it for me. I had something very different in mind.
Different it smells good all the time.
No, I don't know.
Like, so anyway, back to Arbor.
Arbor was special.
You got there and you sensed that special.
Yeah, the space was weird. You know, you walk in, you have to go up these stairs and stuff.
Yeah, yep.
But just sensed that they were special and also loved, you know, one of the things, you go to the website right away when you're trying to check out a church and just love their doctrinal statement, you know, like keeping the main thing, but there was a flexibility and an openness. Mm. So I kind of marched my way through just a few tribes, you know, in like the Christian or, you know, evangelical world. And there was just a sense that like they were trying to create like the biggest possible table, you know, without getting themselves into any trouble.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. Yep.
And there was something about that spirit where I was wanting that. Mm-hmm. And so that those pieces all together. And then obviously at this point now, after we had sensed that like, okay, West Michigan is no longer home, my wife was like, I want to be by my parents.
Yeah.
You know, it had been 20 years since she had lived by her parents and her sisters out in this area and her brothers down in Oregon. That was a big draw as well to kind of have this season for our family, by our kids, by their grandparents and stuff. So that was kind of like the icing on the cake.
Yeah. Are you enjoying the Seattle vibe so far?
Like, oh, I love it.
I mean, Chicago has, you know, you lived in the downtown area. Well, but I mean, and Chicago has a vibe that's similar to like a Seattle kind of culture. It's progressive. It's whatever it is. So I imagine it probably wasn't a super culture shock to come to Seattle and do ministry here.
So I went to a really progressive like high school. Yep. Growing up, I grew up in public schools my whole life. So Moody was like my first private Christian education experience, you know, so being, I mean, it was something, right? Like, you know, it's a whole different culture and different mindset that I just wasn't used to. Like even the church I went to in high school was this big church in the Chicagoland area. It wasn't Willow Creek, but it was another one. And it was, it just didn't have that mindset. You know, there was like, it was certain, like deep down inside, it was fundamentalism and like a sexy rapper.
Yeah, it's really what it was.
Yeah. But it didn't like manifest itself in like the culture or like you couldn't like listen to certain music or watch certain movies. It was very much more permissive in that sense. But coming from that kind of progressive culture, knowing that Seattle's more progressive even, it was not shocking for me at all. In fact, I would say like, I've been in cultures that were so much more conservatively oriented that like kind of battling against that sort of marrying the Republican Party to the Christian church, like, and having to work against that.
Here, that's not really the thing.
No, I mean, you encounter it a little bit, but like, I'd much rather battle the other side. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And not battle, but you know what I mean?
Like,
untangle the idolatries that interweave themselves.
That are on both sides, but
on both sides.
That's right.
But it was like, well, let's work on the other side a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, but yeah, the difference about Seattle is a quirky place.
It is.
So like when I went to a Seattle Mariners game, within my first few weeks of being here, and there's just a weirdness.
Have you been to Portland? Portland, Oregon?
My bachelor party was in Portland.
It's even
a long time ago.
It's even more weird.
It
you
is.
Go down there,
yes, it is weirder. But like the people at the Seattle game, like there's a player on the Mariners with the last name French or France.
Yeah, Ty France.
Ty France. And there's people wearing like French striped shirts with like berets and they're all waving baguettes around.
Oh, yeah.
Like that's just not something you'd see in Chicago. Like, like a group of people acting like super weird.
Yeah.
So we've absolutely... love being in the area, being close to family. Yeah. It's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful area. Yeah. So we've loved it.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask more about Arbor. I was going to say like, what's your heart and excitement about the next steps for Arbor in the season of your life? And I mean, one of the things we do in this podcast, and we'll ask you in a couple of minutes, is what are a couple of prayer requests that we could pray for you and the Plants family and also for Arbor Church going forward, because we ask our people at the end of this podcast when our cool music gets done.
Yeah, so cool.
It's so cool. We're so awesome.
When it stops, just to have them
just
pray
to have
right
them
away.
Stop and yeah. pray. And so, you know, you have 10 million people who listen to this regularly.
Yeah, sure.
So
yeah. Bathing in prayer. Right?
Exactly. Actually, seven.
Like seven people, not 7 million.
Yeah. Seven people is what I meant.
But they're faithful people.
They are.
So faithful.
And their prayers matter much.
They do matter.
And the four of them are sitting around.
So if we can just touch even just one life.
So what are you, know? Anyway, yeah. So what are you excited about for Arbor? What's your vision? What are your dreams in that regard?
My vision is that it would just be a place where people can step in with their uncertainties and with their doubts and experience like a community that is truly kind and good and beautiful, and that they would encounter Jesus in that space. That's really it right now. You know, there's no grand plans. There's a lot of like there's a lot of work that has to be done to kind of write what has been Arbor's past over these past couple of years, and that work is super hard.
Yeah,
you know,
I believe it.
That work is super hard, and it's been.
Are you meeting with a lot of people and things like? Is that kind of what your day to day looks like right now? Is hanging out with people, building trust.
Yeah,
Preaching the word, I imagine.
Preaching the word, building trust, reestablishing systems that have kind of just not been a top priority because they've been so wounded over these past couple of years. And so,
not to mention that church hasn't functioned as it usually has in the last 2 years of life.
Yeah,
America.
Exactly.
It's the COVID era and then a crisis hits and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely compounded.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like two things happened. It's like, it's essentially like, I think like an exponential kind of hurt when these two things kind of compounded for Arbor at the end of 2020. And so, you know, they've allowed some time to pass. But now I think it's really requiring a degree of faith to believe that, again, kind of the same step of faith that I had to take. It's worth it.
Yeah.
It's worth it. The team closest to me, the staff, the elders, the whole church is really having to take this step of faith. And I am as well. Again, you know, it's another step of this is worth it. And we believe that God can bring healing, and we believe that God will bring some flourishing to this community, and that there will be lives that encounter Jesus for the very first time, and their life will be completely and forever altered. And so that's the hope right now for the church.
Yeah, we'll pray that for you as well in the future. And
What about for you and your family, man? I mean, I know this is moving quote unquote back home for your wife, but it's very different now. And I know you said you've struggled with anxiety and stuff in the past. How can our church pray for you as you unfold these layers and try to create a culture, or try to basically enhance a culture where Jesus is the main thing and people can feel comfortable and bring whatever mess they have? How can we pray for you in that?
Yeah, I would say definitely for me personally, the weight and anxiety of leadership is a real thing.
Yeah,
you know,
it totally.
I'm really grateful for the lessons I've learned over the last 6 to 10 years.
This is your first senior pastor, then, basically, like.
That's
I mean, besides the time at the
Evanston Avenue. Yeah, this is the first one.
So it's the second one. Yeah,
sorry about that. I failed miserably on that question, but
But but there's a weight to this because there's a staff and there's more of a history. And I would say, like, even though like they've gone through hardship, like the expectations are like.
Yeah.
We really believe God's gonna bring rejuvenation and a sense of like, revival's the wrong word, but like He's gonna revive this place, right?
Yeah.
And
I think my point in sense is like a teaching pastor role. It seems like you had where this is like a little bit more like you're setting some vision and direction. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
For sure.
Like it seems like you got a spot. Like wow, we have to go somewhere now as a community together. So
And I would say it's the first time with a group of people who. I'm working with a staff in that sense and kind of bringing them along and bringing our elder board along in our church. And so, in that sense, just the weight of it, you know, it's different, you know, it's certainly different and it's heavy. In fact, Tom and I were grabbing lunch yesterday and I think I had brought
that
up.
Was it a Lipsy Taco? Be honest.
No,
it was, Is it Akane Ramen?
I think that's how you say it. Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I took Ryan to.
Yeah, Darren and I went to Lift the Taco a few weeks ago.
I was supposed to be there. Yeah. I had suggested Lift
the
Taco.
I'm living upside down right now.
I blew my back out that day. And so,
He rescheduled. Yeah, totally.
I rescheduled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I was telling Tom, I was like, it's just a different weight, you know?
Yeah.
And I do believe God has. Well, what's the phrase that you used at lunch yesterday, Tom? He equips the called. He doesn't call the equipped.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah. And
which I believe is true, but sometimes you're like, how's that going to work out?
Sure. No. Totally. Yeah. Totally. And I sense that, but I also sense like He has prepared us for this time, but He is also in the moment, like through dependence on Him, equipping us. So prayer for continued like healthy management of that weight and anxiety. Totally. Which I'll say, you know, there were moments early on where I was like, what did we get ourselves into, you know?
Totally.
But God has calmed those fears already.
Great. That's amazing.
And just brought peace and a sense of assurance. Not that like, hey, everything's going to work out great, but like, I love you and I've got you. And even if for this time you are to love and care for this church and whatever the season is and whatever it's to become, like there's no destination where it has to get to.
Yeah.
And man, I would love to sit down and talk with you guys one time about vision and what that means and doesn't mean. Because, you know, it's not that I'm reticent to place a vision out in front of the church. I really just want like the immediate dependency on the Lord amidst uncertainty. Yeah. That's my vision. It's not like, here's the hill we're conquering in 5 years. I don't even know that like they could like bear that weight. I don't even know that I could bear that weight right now. And so just continued healthy management of that weight. And
I might be putting words in your mouth, and so you can correct me, but what I hear and what I sense is like you are at this point wanting to come in and be a shepherd to people and love them and care for them well.
Yeah.
Be faithful to God's word, preach his word, love them well. And I'd be like, okay, here's the 5-year plan. Here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
It all alliterates.
This happened recently in a thing for here at Imprint where someone asked like, what's you guys' 5-year plan? And I'm like, I don't know. I just don't know. Like, is
Follow
that weird?
Jesus.
It was like, is that weird coming from like the supposedly leader of the church, you know? And I said, honestly, my vision is that we stay healthy, you know, I just want to be healthy. Like, I feel like we have a healthy church, and let's do everything we can to not have that go away.
Keep Jesus in the center.
Yeah, and I hear that from you. I'm super grateful to have you as a neighbor, by the way, here in ministry together. It's super cool. And especially after hearing a little bit more about what your heart is and what you want to do, and like that warms my heart.
Yeah. And perhaps maybe more importantly, that he's a neighbor, and the dough zone is opening up here soon.
That's true.
Yeah, we're gonna have to jump in on that.
We should do some dough zone.
You guys might need my oversight for that.
We'll bring you in, Rex.
Okay. Yeah. We can bring your computer and act like you're recording.
I'll act like I'm working. Just to fill my face with dumplings.
That's amazing.
But Ryan, man, it's so great to get to know you a little bit and hear what's going on. And like they said, we're excited to be neighbors with you. Imprint Church, as soon as this is over, pause, don't let it autoplay, stop, and pray for Ryan and his family, pray for Arbor and that family, the Lord would work there, would meet them there, and that the dependence on him would be their only good. So
let me also say, we were talking right before the podcast started, thank you to Arbor Church, because, well, Tom, why should we thank them?
Yeah, well, we planted Imprint Bothell in 2018, Arbor had launched in 2017, and sometime in 2017, I don't remember what part of the year it was. I have a feeling it was like maybe the beginning of the fall. I went over there to preach, and Arbor gave Imprint Bothell $9,000 to basically like Imprint Bothell was able to be planted in part by the support of Arbor Church.
That's awesome.
Which is super cool. Arbor is very generous toward us.
That's awesome.
We're thankful for that.
They gave Tom a $9,000 honorarium, and then they gave $9,000 to plant the church too. That's what they did.
Wow, really? Yeah,
so there was no honorarium. Yeah. there might have been an honorarium, but it wasn't $9,000.
Yeah, I heard differently. I'm just kidding. Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's cool. That's a cool thing. So Arbor Church, if you listen to this, thank you for the support there and that partnership. So,
yeah. All right, everyone. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.